Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Woody Overton Window. I am your host, Mike Agavino. This is your show for Friday, June 14th, 2024. Where is the year going? Woody is once again unable to be with us today, but I do have breaking Woody Overton news for you. So Woody was finally diagnosed with something called brucellosis. It's an extremely rare disease. It has to be directly transferred from an animal to a human, which you guys know Woody. I mean, that fits the mold. So there were apparently only two cases of this across the entire United States last year. There's never been a case of it in the state of Louisiana until now. So I think a bunch of people are going to be poking needles in Woody for a while to try to learn some stuff. But Woody is pretty sure that he got this when he had all his Wisconsin buddies down boar hunting like 2 months ago, 3 months ago. And he said that he got cut on his hand and the cut was still bleeding and he didn't cover it when he began cutting up the boar. And so he's sure that, you know, exposed cut that was bleeding and then, you know, that hand being all around the boar is what did it. So he's the good news, obviously, now that they know what it is, they can treat it with the right stuff. He's recovering and recovering quickly. He's out of the woods and not in any danger. And I think for a couple of days there, folks, it was pretty sketchy. So he's going to remain in the hospital for a couple more days and just get stronger. And then probably early part of next week, return home. He's going to stay off of social until at least probably Father's Day. So I wouldn't stack him up with a bunch of stuff there. I mean, he'll get online when he gets online. The important thing is he's recovering. They figured out what it is. He's on the mend. He's going to be released in a few days. And who knows? As quick as that guy recovers, he might very well be doing the show with me next Friday. So, he mentioned how much he appreciates all the outreach. There's been a ton of support and well wishes that he's received from so many of you. The good news is that, again, he's going to be back with us shortly, and we look forward to, for the first time, having Woody on the show that bears his name. I have a surprise for you guys today. You're not going to be alone with Aggo for the next hour or two. I have got a special guest that is going to host the show with me today. In fact, we're going to also put this show out on a feed that I share with him. But first, let me tell you a little bit about him. My guest is a journalist, author, actor, talk and reality TV host. He's also the most popular recurring guest in the history of the Howard Stern Show, back when it was funny. And he's also a podcasting legend with his top-ranked entertainment podcast called Fame is a Bitch that we actually started together back in 2017. You may know him best for his hosting role on E! Network's Mysteries and Scandals series. I know him best because as a kid, I met him on a ball field in West Islip, New York in 1974. That's right. We've been friends for 50 years. Our guest today is my buddy, AJ Benza. Alf, welcome to the Woody Overton window and to your own show, Everything is a Bitch.
Thank you, buddy. You made me sound like, I guess I was a pretty big shot for a while, wasn't I?
You're still a big shot, dude.
Oh, well. Well, look, I love crime. My father was an undercover cop for many years in New York City. I'm addicted to all types of crime shows. I love real life, real crime. So, yeah, this will be fun. I can't wait to dive in.
Well, we're going to do some crime. We're also going to do a lot of what you and I do. Yeah. So we'll find some other stuff to talk about. We'll also, I've got a game for you. Again, today we had some good feedback on the game we played the other day. I think this time you'll do a little better than you did the last time. So,
I didn't do well. People, my listeners were giving me a lot of crap. I didn't get Gwyneth Paltrow. I missed
that one. Surprised me a little bit. I don't know. I think I took off with how that started, but I think I got 10 questions for you today.
All right.
That I think you're going to get at least 8 of them right is my prediction.
All right.
But
let's
we'll
see.
Do that. Okay. We'll do that later in the show.
All right.
I want to start with the fact that Caitlin Clark is not our top sports story today. So a sports story has finally come along that's compelling enough to knock Caitlin Clark off of the front page, at least temporarily.
Yeah.
And let's face it, there are only a couple of names in the world that could possibly remove Ms. White Pretty Privilege off of the front page. And so you've probably guessed by now that it is none other than Joey Chestnut.
Yeah, that's right, Joey. Big story out in Brooklyn. Big story.
It is. It is, man. So the shocking news broke the internet on Tuesday night when we learned that the 16-time champion, 16 times, Joey Chestnut had been declared ineligible for this year's Nathan's 4th of July hot dog eating contest.
Mm. Wow. That's not the same. It's not going to be the same thing. I mean,
There's no way. What's left is amateurs. No, there's like that Kobayashi guy or whatever his name is, right?
Kobayashi. I
don't even know if he's in it. But Chestnut had won this thing every year since 2016.
Yeah.
So 8 years in a row, he'd won it. The governing body over such contests is a group called Major League Eating. Possibly the best name for a league since American Dodgeball Association of America. But Major League Eating, I can't believe that's the freaking governing body, announced that they are declaring Chestnut ineligible because he became the endorser of a vegan hot dog brand instead of Nathan's.
Oh, this is not fair because I don't know what kind of deals you get when you're in a major league eater, but clearly Impossible Foods gave him a decent deal so he can earn some money aside from cramming 72 hot dogs down his throat. He's got to take some cash, got to get a brand deal, but I think this is going to be settled. They're going to have him back. I think at the 11th hour, you're going to see Chestnut, like Willis Reed, come out of the locker room after halftime and help the Knicks to a championship. This is going to be a big New York story.
Look, if they don't, I think they are very vulnerable to a guerrilla move here where, like, somebody like our buddy at Barstool Sports could
Portnoy could
come along, you know, put, like, a little mini stand together, like, 200 yards down the beach and stream Chestnut in real time with the contest, eating as many as he can eat, show that he would be the real winner, get other sponsors involved in that, and then steal the freaking show from ESPN and Nathan's in subsequent years. Because, look, you gotta protect the golden goose, right? How could these people put themselves in a position where Chestnut wasn't under contract and protected from doing these things because he was being compensated so well? So,
I just hope that DEI has not crept into the Nathan's hot dog eating contest. We don't need any new participants who can't do the amazing things that Joey Chestnut did. The good news is, aside from me thinking they're going to come to a deal, The other good news is there's a big show on Netflix, September 2nd. Chestnut and Kobayashi are going to go head-to-head on Netflix.
Oh, so really?
Maybe Portnoy calls Ted Sarandos over at Netflix and says, get a crew out here, Ted. We're going to have the hot dog eating contest for real every year now on. That'd be awesome.
Wow. So I had not seen that.
Yes.
But look, I think your scenario's more likely than mine, because a heck of a lot more planning would need to go into. I mean, that July 4th is.
It's fast coming.
They wouldn't have a whole lot of time to plan for it. But I'm not an expert in what kind of training it takes.
No.
And the endurance necessary to consume. This guy did 76 hot dogs in 10 minutes in 2022. That's the world record.
That's amazing. But I think you take away the bread. Get rid of the bread. The bread, I mean, I know they have a technique of dousing the bread in water. And it just looks so disgusting. But if you get rid of the bread, can Joey go to 100 hot dogs? And then you got to think of also, there's got to be a young guy out there who is a Chestnut wannabe, finally thinks this is my year. Chestnut's not playing. And then the last minute, Chestnut comes out from behind a wall, and this kid's dreams is crushed.
Interesting.
He's not going to place at all. It's going to be a big summer story.
Do you think there are like scouts that go around the country? They hit ball games. They hit state fairs. They go to the beach, and they try and find like young fat kids overeating and groom them into competing. Yeah. I mean, where's the minor leagues for this thing? How do you come into prominence?
I think I'm part of the minor league system, quite honestly. But, you know, that's a great vision as a major league eating scout, going to all-you-can-eat buffets and just hitting on places where you're going to find the next big eater.
Dude, actually, it's a great movie premise.
The movie premise. It is. Bill Murray. Put Bill Murray on. Oh, this is great. Yeah, I like this idea.
Yeah, so this guy is like a drunken former Major League Baseball scout, down on his luck. He watches the 4th of July hot dog eating contest, and he gets the idea, and then he rides a Greyhound bus around the country looking for kids that can eat a lot of shit. And but you know what? That would be good. No, they'll never make that.
It's Kingpin, but with hot dogs. And they'll never make it right, because we can't talk about people being overweight, because they're all beautiful and obesity is wonderful. So it can't be made. Can't do it.
Unfortunately, you're right, although that would be funny. But all right. So let me ask you, if you had to enter some kind of food eating contest, but you could pick what it was going to be that you would eat, what would you pick as?
I'm gonna have to go pizza. I'm gonna have to go pizza, but it's got to be brick or coal oven pizza, not any fast food joints, not Papa John's, not none of those brands. It's got to be in New York City. We're having I've been arguing with people on my show because some are from Connecticut, and they really believe that Connecticut is the pizza capital of America.
That's bullshit.
It's so ridiculous. Stupid. It's just so stupid. Because
of that one new place in New Haven, right?
Yeah. One place. And I can rattle off 50 places in New York. New York, you can stop any place in the city and get a piece of pie. And it's down beneath Penn Station, pizza's better than Connecticut. These people are ridiculous. But I go pizza. Give me pizza all day.
Okay. Yeah, I was having one of those, you know, shut up, you're so old dad conversations with the kids the other night, because I was talking about how we'd do whatever the heck we'd do, and then we'd pull into the shopping center and go into Mike's Pizza and order two slices.
Oh yeah.
And they're like, two slices?
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, two freaking slices. And they were like 50 cents a piece. You could go in with $1.50 and get two slices of pizza and a Coke and boom.
It was and so great.
If you weren't into it, you'd go next door to AJ's favorite Chinese place and get
Long River.
Go to Long River Kitchen and bring an egg roll in there.
Oh yeah.
Back into Mike's Pizza. But I feel old when I get into that kind of stuff with the kids these days. All right, if it were me, because I think when you go pizza, you bring in a level of competition that it's going to be pretty tough to beat the heavy expert pizza eaters.
Oh,
I think you got to go a little bit You got to go a little bit off the grid.
More niche, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm going prosciutto. dude.
What a choice that is.
I can eat me some prosciutto. I mean, really? I can. Oh, yeah. I'll go and I'm the guy because people hate when you order prosciutto and you're in front of them because the guy lays between each slice of prosciutto, they lay that clear plastic that you can easily peel one piece from another. So right. You get in front of some old lady and you go, I'll take 2 pounds of the La Parma prosciutto, please.
It's 20 minutes.
And dude, that's my order. Yeah. I mean, that's my go-to.
That's so, I didn't order that. Wow.
And I'll come in the house with that, and Jerry and I'll look at, you know, it's an inch thick.
That's a lot of meat.
And, well, that's a lot of prosciutto. I'm like, okay, but, you know, it's 20 sandwiches. I'm just, you know, I'm breaking it down over time. But but it would have to be a move like that. I think if Kenny were with us, he'd see whether going down on a woman counted as in this category.
He'd say, is there a beaver competition? The whole place would fall apart.
It would get DQ'd quickly.
There was a, you know, the old restaurant in Hollywood. A big pizza. But Mario Batali owned it, the guy who got Me Too'd. But I know Mario from New York. And when they were open, Matzah on in Hollywood.
Matzah's closed?
Yeah, well, I don't think it's closed. But Mario got Me Too'd. He's no longer involved in all of his restaurants. He's coming back now. But when they first were opening, there was nothing in the joint yet. But Mario had been to Italy and got these big wheels of, you know, Parmigiano Reggiano cheese and the big prosciutto hams that are hanging. The thieves just came in to steal the cheese and the Parma. That's worth so much money, right? Yeah. So, prosciutto's a good call. Very good
I do
call.
Not blame. I'm surprised I didn't get investigated in that situation. I think a lot of fingers would have pointed my way.
You know what our buddy Chico did? Our buddy Chico robbed an Italian deli. He completely, I forget how he did it, but he went in the back door. He knew a guy. They loaded the van up with all sorts of food. We didn't know this. He brings all these great cold cuts and treats from Italy to Rosalie's house, my sister's house. And on a Sunday, we're all eating and having a ball. And then the next day, there's a story that such and such a place got robbed. And my sister said, Chico, did you do this? He goes, yeah, and you ate the evidence.
Oh, my God. Now,
great times.
This is the real life, real crime audience here hearing about
Chico,
about our favorite derelict growing up, Chico, who left us some years back. I saw you liked the picture I posted.
Yeah,
it was, so it was 7 years ago yesterday. We were all together,
really?
Me, you, and Kenny at the house in L.A. And you brought Chico's ashes over, and we had. We had Chico's ashes in the.
Oh, that's great! Oh, that was a great anniversary. I didn't know that. Okay, cool. Yeah, but he did. I mean, when it came to crime, he knew his way around a room. He was very good at sizing up a restaurant, or he just, you know, I have 30% criminal in me. He had 70%, so he'd walk around.
Dude, you're not 30%. You're like
no. I'm just in thinking.
10. You're 10. He's 90.
Well, I don't perform the crimes. I'm just. I have a mind to see. You could break in that door. Where's the camera? It's just for shits and giggles. But
you
Chico will actually
out.
Map it out. He'll stake it out and do it. I'll just look at it and go, yeah, you could probably make a turnover here, maybe 3 dinners a night. You start putting figures in your head, but Chico will then carry it out and do it.
Yeah. That's unfortunately for me, one of those he did to one of my college roommates while he was staying with me for a weekend. So
I know. Did it to my uncle too. I know. Horrible. I know.
You know, you can love a guy and hate a guy at the same time.
Yeah,
I mean, his demons were his demons.
Yep. Very deep.
Any final thoughts on our boy, Mr. Chestnut? I guess we should leave it there and see what happens. Or if you had to take a bet on an alternative with somebody like Barstools, or I was thinking maybe the Manning brothers could get Kings of Lion involved and pull something off quick. But
that'd be fun.
It's probably going to be what you said. It's probably going to get rescued and fixed.
I think so. But I'd love to see Eli and his brother calling that competition if they would ever do it. That'd be fun because those guys are great when they do the simulcast on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, no, that would they could pull it off.
Yeah,
they could pull
it,
and so could Portnoy. That would
sure.
be great too. So
let's see.
I think it's time. What the hell was the name of that league? The Major League Eating. I think it's time they took a Major League Beating for having such a stupid name and not taking care of their cash cow. If a relative, friend, pet, or coworker should eat 76 hot dogs and go tits up this week, you need to reach out to the pros. Our friends Roy, Kristen, and Kristen at Louisiana Funeral Services and Louisiana Pet Crematory. They've got a team of professionals that are more skilled than Max Verstappen's Red Bull pit crew. They take care of every phase, so whether it's a full traditional service in burial or a cremation, or a service in cremation for a beloved pet or critter, they've got you covered. You can drive into Broussard and look for that big American flag, or you can go to lafuneralservices.com or lapetcrematory.com, and Roy, Kristen, and Kristen will treat you like family because they are family to us. Rest easy. Our good friends from Parish Forensics and Louisiana Funeral Services and Pet Crematory. Let's go to the next logical place, AJ. We've had some fun with hot dog eating contests. Let's talk a little presidential family, Hunter Biden verdict.
Sure.
How you doing a few days later on this?
Well, I'm not, I mean, I'm not shocked, but I think what we saw was kind of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Let's get him on this charge. Let's make everybody think we're going to uphold the law. The courts are doing it the right way, and Trump got a trial. Now Hunter got a trial. Both guilty. I think it's just a window dressing for the Democrats to make everybody think that law and order is still very important, because I don't think it is anymore with those people.
Okay, so this is the no one is above the law verdict.
Yeah.
Hunter, you're going to take one for the team because you're not going to get in any trouble here. You're not going to do any time. Right. And this way we get that over with, and then we can figure out a way to deal with the other stuff. And in the meantime, it's good for the campaign, right? So if the whole family is huddling, that's what the family's coming up with.
Sure. That's what I think. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that's a possibility. But I also think if once that's done, which it's now basically done, I mean, we've got to see what the sentencing is, right? But right. Now Hunter holds all the cards, right? Because other stuff, you know, the other trial, the tax situation, I mean, he could roll on his dad. He could roll on Obama. I mean, he could roll some people big time on that thing, because there were a lot of hands on that thing. There were a lot of hands in that story. And I'm not saying I don't think that you're probably right, that was part of the thinking here.
Right.
But, you know, you've also got the judge is the judge that made this thing happened to begin with, because she didn't go for the BS plea deal that the DOJ had put together with Hunter's defense attorneys that was going to ensure that he was never tried for anything.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, part of me, I think there's just so much 3D chess going on with all of this kind of stuff that, you know, you have to have a conspiratorial mindset, and you have to go like, you know, you're playing a chessboard, two moves, three moves ahead. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, when I look at the board, I see a Hunter who's got nothing to worry about now, because daddy can't let him get in trouble. Uncle Barack can't let him get in trouble.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of reasons why, the rest of this thing has to go a certain way for people. At least that's my opinion of things. You guys could and probably do have different ones, but when it comes to the other case, it's going to bring in a lot of other issues. And really, to me, the biggest thing that happened in this case happened on day one. At least it should have been the biggest thing that happened, and it should have been the thing that drew attention from the media across the board.
What's that?
The prosecution came in day one with the Hunter Biden laptop submitted as evidence and put an FBI agent on the stand who validated the authenticity of the laptop, and also validated that it came into their possession in November of 2019.
Right, right. I know. It's unbelievable.
So just some people aren't good with dates. So just play that back for a second.
Yeah.
So almost a year later, we are in the middle of the presidential campaign of 2020, and we have a story that comes out from the New York Post that that they have been shown the laptop, that it is authentic, that they've seen pictures, videos, and other elements. And they are immediately, their account is immediately suspended by Twitter. They are, you're not allowed to share that post. You're not allowed within the next 48 hours or so to see it. All the reporting everywhere is squelched across the rest of social media and broadcast media. The present Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, puts together a letter signed by 51 different people involved in the, you know, industry of the spy industry, basically, to say that the laptop story, you know, bears, this is loosely translated, but bears all of the hallmarks of a Russian operation, right? So it is discarded across mainstream media completely as Russian, a Russian disinformation scam. And the story never gets to the masses. It gets to a very small proportion of the country, and it is it is stymied there, and it's not really clear until Elon Musk buys Twitter and then hires three independent liberal contractors in Matt Taibbi and Michael Schellenberger and what is her name? I always forget it. She's really, really good. She was New York Times forever. I can't think of her name. I'll think of it in a minute. But anyway, hires those people to report on all of the information that is captured from Slack channels, which is the software a lot of tech companies use to communicate with employees who are in a virtual environment. So they're capturing all the internal interpretation to all the incoming messaging from the government, asking them to not post certain things, to shadow ban certain things, to censor completely certain things. And all of this comes out, and all of these people testify in Barry Weiss is the other. And so, I mean, that's the first time I really became aware where I knew, oh my gosh. So, you know, this effort to, and censorship was ran that deep. And, and so, you know, when you're around a group of people, and I hate when this happens and runs for the hills, but you get in, you see the, you know, the election denier language comes up, and the was an election stolen? Did somebody cheat? All that kind of stuff. You know, look, to me, the bottom line is that the Democrats won the 2020 presidential election. But they won it by really undermining the essence of election integrity at every turn. I mean, every possible way they could figure out how to cheat, they did. I mean, it's like remember the 2019 World Series with the Houston Astros, where you know, they stole signs from the catcher, and then they signaled them back to the hitters by hitting the trash can.
Trash can, yeah. Unbelievable. Okay.
No one took their World Series win away. Now, there was some accountability there. They fired a manager a couple of other people involved in that situation. Yeah. But I think those two things are pretty analogous. In a situation where you truly believe that you have to win, that that you're on the side of right.
Right.
When that happens, the rules go out the window, and it becomes ends justifies the means, and you'll do whatever you can do to get the result you want to get. And so I readily say to people, they won. But this is how they won, or at least it's reasonable to think it's how they won, because we don't have data to tell us what would have happened had they not done these things. Right. So
of course it's look, every side in any sport and any political race, I think, knows the avenues they can choose to make the competition a little closer, or I think everybody knows what to do. That, like you mentioned baseball, stealing signs is something people do, but the Houston Astros and the Red Sox just figured out how to make it so much bigger that it was obscene. Tom Brady, maybe the footballs were deflated. Do we really know? Did that make him better?
Well,
there are little things that people know how to do to cheat. The Democrats
he admitted it as roast.
Yeah, he did. I know.
Wouldn't you have done it for $30 million or whatever the heck it was?
Yeah, of course. But look, that's the scary thing is many of those people still consider Hunter's laptop possibly Russian disinformation. Many of them still consider it. So even with all this information, remember President Trump sat down with Leslie Stahl for 60 minutes, and that exact conversation where, you're saying the laptop was, and Trump's like, well, Leslie, you're wrong. No, I'm not. You can't say that. You can't say it's his laptop. Leslie, it's his laptop. I mean, she has to eat those words. I hope she sees that over and over every day.
Well, I remember that exchange. But in fairness, it was before the Twitter files came out. Yes, it was after everything had been censored. But it was it was before there was massively available proof that that it was real and the story was true the entire time. So I mean, you had tons of people. Look, you had in the freaking presidential debate when Trump hit Biden on it. Biden, said 51 professionals have come out and said that this is Russian disinformation, and that's one of those things where you look at it and go, man, it's like when Clinton did the, depends what your definition of is.
Yeah,
it's,
exactly.
It's semantics where they wordsmith things to, it bears all the hallmarks of Russian disinformation. We happen to know that it's not.
Right.
But that doesn't stop us from writing a letter that says it shows all the hallmarks.
Yeah.
So, it's pretty scary. But look, we're the shoe on the other foot.
Yeah.
The situation completely reversed. I can tell you with confidence that the Republican Party 20 years ago, that never could have happened. I'd like to think it couldn't happen now. And look, he didn't put Hillary in prison when he could have. I mean, there are things that you can look at and say, I don't think the administration would have done something like it, but you don't know. I mean, and the fact is that everybody, they're all cheaters. It's a matter of degrees and what.
That's what I meant. So. That's what I meant. I'll tell you, if Trump goes on to win this thing, it would be very cool of him to pardon Hunter. I think that
he said as much already.
That'd be a great move. I mean, who knows? But it'd be a great move for him to win some sort of a good favor in some people. But that's a long ways off. We'll see what happens with that. That's going to be the adventure of the year, that race. My goodness.
Yeah, it is. It's already crazier than anything I've ever seen. So
it's springtime, boys. The grass is green, the birds are chirping, and the kids will be out of school soon. That makes it the perfect time to plan a family vacation. And we know from the stories we cover that this is not exactly the time to take the family to the Caribbean. You don't want to end up in the middle of some cartel drug shootout. So this year, it's time to take an international journey. And of course, a big international trip is just one reason to learn a new language with Rosetta Stone. You might have a different one. Maybe you want to connect with family or friends living overseas. Maybe you want to acquire a new skill for work or better understand a certain culture. Rosetta Stone has helped me have fun with my mother and at least have partial conversations in Italian after only a few lessons.
Rosetta Stone is the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Arabic, Polish, and many more. Rosetta Stone immerses you in many ways. No English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in that language. Intuitive process, you pick up a language naturally. Designed for long-term retention. Speech recognition, the true accent feature is like having a personal trainer for your accent. Rosetta Stone is convenient and an amazing value.
That's right, Woody. A lifetime membership has all 25 languages for any and all trips and language needs. That's lifetime access to all 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Real Life Real Crime and Daily Show listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Sayonara.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
The last couple of days, we've learned about this sting operation between the FBI and ICE to gather these suspects that were allegedly planning a bomb attack somewhere in the United States. Have you paid attention to, to this
one? Yeah. I pay attention because I always feel like we're just always on the precipice of another great, unfortunate disaster here. When you read statistics that a lot of TSA professionals at airports around America, they have these, let's call them pop quizzes, so to speak, where people walk through the terminals with, you know, guns or any kind of equipment you're not supposed to have on an airplane. And I think I hear like 85 to 90% of the people get through. It's all done with people that, you know, it's all friendly, but that's how much gets past TSA. So I'm not sure how much worse off we are. I always considered it something that was bound to happen again. But now when you let people in and don't have any idea where they're from, who they are, what their rap sheet looks like, what have you, of course you're begging for another big disaster. And, you know, we're going to get one. Just when I finally got into, well, I can fly. It's not that much of an aggravation. I know. I'm good with TSA. So, you know, get there early. It's just going to be, we're going to go through this again now. Something again is going to happen bad. And I hate to say it, but look, you can't take an enemy like that and right away, after 9/11, begin building a mosque 5 miles, not even 5 miles from where the World Trade Center is. And suddenly we're hearing the Muslim call for prayer in Brooklyn. These are things that just don't make sense to many Americans. You just don't do that. You invite them all back in. They don't like us. They're going to do something bad. You know, I'm not happy about it, but do you ever go to the movies with your family or anything big and wonder, is this the next mass shooting? Am I walking into the next situation here? It's very scary all around. just staying home seems to be the only safe way to go.
Yeah. So, well, let me ask you, because I felt really stupid. Had you ever heard of Tajikistan before this thing?
I've heard of it, but I don't know much about it. I know it's all the stands, the stand countries right next to China and, you know, all that whole area up there. Afghanistan, Tajikistan.
Pakistan.
There's another couple of ones.
Kazakhstan.
I know it from Borat. Borat. That's how we learned about it. Otherwise, you're right, Mike. Most Americans don't walk around thinking of Kazakhstan or Tajikistan.
No, I heard the name of the place, I was like, where the F is that? So I did a little research, and you know, yes, all of those countries have the suffix stan.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Which I learned in Persian means a place of.
Oh.
So okay. I immediately thought to myself, does that mean Tajik means bomb? A place of bombs? I don't know.
We should have seen it happening. It actually spells out where they make bombs, but we didn't catch that.
I don't know what it means, but all of those countries, they're all former Soviet republics, and they're all overwhelmingly Muslim. And so, you know, when you hear that that all of these people, every single one of them, you know, passed through an inspection at the southern border, you know, look, I'm sorry, I know this is quote unquote racial profiling, but if you're knocking on the door at the border, and I open the door, and it's, you know, you put the name in, and they're from Tajikistan or however the heck you say it, or no, Johnny can't come out to play. You go back home. You know, sorry, folks, park's closed. I mean, it's harsh maybe, and going to, you know, prevent certain people that might be there possibly for the right reason. But there's certain places on earth, you know, that the odds are not very good that that person is coming here for the right reasons. And unfortunately, that person has to pay for the place where they've chosen to live. Could have got out of there and gone somewhere else. And so, you know, and I remember Trump doing the ban on China flights during the virus and all the hullabaloo about that. I mean, sometimes you have to put something like that in play, even if your priority is, which it certainly has been, to be pretty lax on restrictions at that border. I mean, now we know we have a really big problem. We just don't know where it exists. We don't know who any of these people are, and I don't know how we prevent something.
I know how you prevent significant it. From happening. Well, you let the Border Patrol do their damn job. They want to do their job. They're not able to. People are walking through with no problems. And most people outside of America, maybe people on the East Coast, don't really know how beautiful San Diego is. San Diego is one of the most beautiful cities in the country. And to see what's coming across the border, literally going through people's backyards with magnificent pools. And it makes me think of you and I were lucky enough to grow up with pools in our backyard. But if we had friends over, my father and your dad were cool. But if I started to bring over people whose names I didn't know and didn't know where they come from, what schools they went to, I think our fathers would have said, hey, enough with this pool party shit. Okay, I need to know who these kids are. You know, a couple of plants got trampled. The window got busted. Who are these people? I don't know, Dad. Well, there's no more pool parties. It's just simple. There's a guy on social media, a liberal-minded guy, and some kid on the street has a microphone. So you think people should come here without being invested? And the guy said, absolutely. We need all the immigrants we need. And that's what makes America grow. And we're not having enough babies. We need these people. This guy's outside of his house watering his lawn. And there's like four Hondurans come down the street. And the guy says, oh, these are four people from Honduras. They don't have a place to stay. But you've got a big house, I noticed. Maybe you could put them up in a room. And the guy's like, no, I don't want them here. I don't know these people. And the guy's like, exactly. Why would you let them in your home, let alone your country? You've got to know who's coming in. You're not on the list, buddy.
They set the poor Honduran guys up on the veil.
Well, I don't know how that worked out, but the guys were there to make this guy look like a fool. And of course he did. But I just don't see anything wrong with knowing who's coming in. And if they pass all the obligatory things they have to do to get in here, then welcome aboard. Make America better. That's what our grandparents
did. Absolutely. None of this should be hard. Built by immigrants and legal immigrants are welcome.
Yep.
If anything, for anything to be special, I mean, think of the team you wanted to make, the club you wanted to join, the girl you wanted to date, whatever the heck it is, that girl isn't special if 30 guys have been there before you. That team isn't special if there aren't tryouts and cuts. I mean, that's the way it works. And if this country is to continue to be or to regain its status as a very special place, we need to make it, the pathway here, somewhat difficult. We need to make sure people really want to be here and then really want to be contributing citizens. Because if they don't, they can only make us weaker.
Yeah, I know. And don't forget, our grandparents came here when there was no welfare, so they didn't come here to go on the dole. They came here to work and make their families have a better shot at success, which they've all done. Every generation seems to outdo the last in terms of income and what have you. That's the way America's been working for a long time. And it's not going to go that way anymore. This is going to be a real blight on our country's history. And the new rule he put in place, this stupid $2,500 a day, and then after that it goes down to, no one understands this. Basically, we're just still letting people in, but just not as many as before, not as obscene a number. It's so stupid.
Well, I mean, with all the caveats, I don't know that it ends up being any lower, because if you're using the app, it doesn't count. If you're on a company, there are all these cutouts, and then all of these numbers, you have to maintain 7 days at that level or 14 days. I mean, it's all crazy. But
I will say this. I keep mentioning our ancestors. When they came here, basically, I've seen a beautiful documentary on, I can't remember the name of it, but I'm talking about Italy because that's our background. But these people they didn't have clothes to arrive in a new country. They were peasants, basically, a lot of them. And they'd have to sell animals to get clothes that once belonged to dead people. Maybe the shoes were too big, maybe too tight, the suit was a little too small, but they all got on that boat and they came here. Doesn't seem that hard, but they did have to endure a couple of things that were difficult. These people now, they're getting taken for a ride, they're getting ripped off of all their money. I don't know how they're even doing this. It's gotten so much more dangerous to come here with these coyotes and what have you, and the people who drive them across the border a lot of them are losing their lives before they even get here. That's the sad part about it as well.
Well, when you saw what happened with some of these elections in the EU over the past week, where countries like France are saying, you know what, we've lost control of our culture.
Yeah.
And, that's a very different place than here, right? I mean, that's a place where they're French. Yeah. All of them are French, or the vast majority of them are French, where, we are a melting pot of people who came from all over the globe. But there, open borders can infiltrate and impact a culture really quickly, because that culture has been more or less pure. And that goes for many of those countries. And so, I don't know if we'll see the same kind of reaction from U.S. voters, because, again, they're a lot more diversified than those countries in Europe. But anyway, I think it's as simple as, if you want something to be special, it's got to be hard to achieve or hard to get or hard to get into.
Exactly.
And And that listen, ain't happening right now.
And listen, you know, it's not just here, but if the last 3 years, the number one baby name in London is Muhammad, you've got a problem.
Is that true?
Muhammad should not be the number one baby's name for several years running in England. It may not be this past year, but I know when I was since I've been doing this show, Muhammad has been a number one baby name in London for quite a couple of years, two or three years in a row. Yeah, so it's a very different world.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
Okay, so I get obsessed with these things, and now I can't get away from it because my social media feeds are all full of nothing but shark attacks now.
Oh, yeah. Love it.
So have you been following any of this?
Yeah.
What's going on in the panhandle?
Yeah. I mean, three attacks in one day off the Florida coast. I'm obsessed with them. I watch all the Shark Week shows. This is shaping up to be quite a different summer. The Sharks this year seem to really want to make a statement. Why are they getting so much closer to shore? What are we doing? What's happening?
I don't know, but look, my conspiracy theory, because if it was, if I could figure out how to do this, I would do this, I think.
Yeah.
So I love Destin. I love the beaches of Destin. I love the white sand and
the panhandle.
The clear blue one. Well, not all the panhandle, but Destin specifically. Yeah. That beach is
beautiful.
Is gorgeous, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I, for years, said, I'm going to buy a piece of land. I'm going to build a house there, blah, blah, blah. Excuse me. Never got around to it. Or it just didn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, we were out in California. It didn't make sense, blah, 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 blah. Well, stuff is crazy expensive there now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, I can't believe how expensive it is there versus just a few years ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what could possibly impact pricing there? The only thing I can think of. Is a massive influx of sharks that are swimming in like knee deep water, right? That'll get somebody to sell a condo quick.
Hell yeah. Knee deep water.
So if you buy that premise, then all we need to do is really look for people who have enough expertise in sharks to be able to, you know, do the Aquaman telepathic commanding of those sharks to be in that shallow water.
Yeah, that's my son went to Malibu the other day with his buddies, and it was kind of an overcast day. We've had a lot of those in L.A. recently. And I said, look, just don't go past your knees. It's overcast. That's what sharks like. He's laughing at me. But I still think in terms like that. I did a show on this several weeks back. One of the first actress in Jaws who was eaten at the beach at night, she died, and I did a little eulogy for her. But that scene has changed everyone's internal mix. I mean, that affected everyone, shark attack. I saw a movie the other night called Under Paris about a shark and sharks, plural, that get caught in the Seine River, which is fresh water. It makes no sense, but a fantastic movie, almost as crazy as Jaws. So there's always a fascination.
Well, there are a lot of sharks in rivers now. I mean, bull sharks especially.
Yeah, bull sharks especially, right. And, you know, Jaws was made because of a shark that got into the tributaries in, I think, New Jersey,
yeah.
Right? But I'm obsessed with them. I've never come face-to-face with one while I'm swimming, but I did see his video the other day of a couple of girls parasailing, and as their parasail was lowering, they're seeing a bunch of sharks beneath them. And the people in the boat couldn't hear them yelling about sharks. They're like 80 yards away. And these two girls are hitting the water, splashing and screaming, which is the one thing you don't want to do. You get up high in clear water, you can see sharks 50, 60 yards offshore. So they're here, man. They're here. I don't go out in the ocean past my, I may catch a wave or two and that's it. I'm done.
Well, I love to swim in the ocean. I love to bodyboard or boogie board. But the thing about there, and a couple of weeks ago when we were there, you know, you'll see a school of fish, small fish come in. And where there's a school of small fish, there's big fish below them trying to eat them, or bigger fish. And so my wife and my son were out, and they saw a shark. I don't know how big the shark was. probably a smaller shark, mm-hmm. by this school of fish. And it kind of freaked them out a little bit. They came out of the water and then they went back in. The beauty is in that water, at least you can see. So I'm out in the water and I see a similar school, and I go underwater and I see that there's a barracuda chasing them.
Wow.
And I mean, those things are so fast, and I've been in the water with them a number of times over the years, and they'll leave you alone. They're not coming after you. Cause if they wanted to, I mean, they are lightning.
Oh,
they
just they'll kill you.
Come to but, you know, Malibu, you can't see crap. I mean, it's like in the Atlantic going to the beach on Long Island, you know, you can maybe see your feet in a foot of water, but get beyond that. And
no, it's gross. I know. I know. I we grew up on Great South Bay, and back in like 75, we're going fishing, and we would see, we could see our bait on the floor. We were going flounder fishing.
Yeah, remember
that? We would see, that's my flounder's too small, move your bait. It was beautiful. And I remember seeing, as we're clamming in the flats, water's up to your waist, and a little school of fish go by, and here come a bunch of bluefish. Now, if bluefish wanted to bite people, they swim in such a school that they have nasty teeth, bluefish. They could rip you apart if they wanted to. But I know that hammerhead sharks apparently breed in the lower waters of the bay. Never saw one of those. But we did see, the first week we moved to Long Island, we saw a shark about 6 foot wash up in the canal, dead.
Really?
That's all my sister Rosalie had to see. She maybe went clamming once in the next 30 years. She would always stay on the boat and be on shark patrol. Because she couldn't take, she lived on the water, and that shark, 6 foot shark dead in the canal was pretty scary. Somebody probably threw it on the water.
Sure, you caught that and cut it.
Yeah, I think so. But it just had this horrifying look. Those shark eyes in the canal. It's not comforting.
I was on that water every day of the summer for 20 years, and I never saw a shark in the bay.
No, never, no.
I saw some nasty stuff in there, but never a shark. Yeah. So, okay. So you don't buy my theory though, right? That this can't be the cause.
It's interesting to change the real estate value, but now there's a reason why they're coming in certain, I'll leave that to the experts, but this happens every summer, especially if you're a kid who grew up on the East Coast. It's not summer until there are, don't forget, I was a newspaper man. There's gotta be some shark stories when summertime hits, because where it bleeds, it leads. That people love those stories, man. They talk about it around the family. You know, it's always going to be there on the East Coast.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Okay, let's turn away from the sharks. Let's swim away from the sharks for a minute. All right, here's a story that I think is right up the AJ Benza alley, because I've heard many stories from you over the years about things that happened to you on the checkout line at a C store or some other kind of store. And there's a story about Dollar General. Now, I don't know if there are there Dollar Generals in California. I don't remember.
No, we had, we had 99 cent stores, but those are closing as well. We don't have Dollar General.
Okay. Dollar General is a huge national chain. I mean, they have thousands of stores across the country. And and this company, during during the COVID tyranny, decided to add self-checkout capabilities across 12,000 plus stores.
Right.
So in a 2-year period, they went through the expense as a company to add 12,000 of these self-checkout locations.
Yeah.
They are pulling out all 12,000 of those self-serve checkouts here just a couple of years later. And I happened to stream the financial presentation of the CEO and CFO of the company talking about the impact on their on their business, you know, the losses of as a result of having those self-serve kiosks. And they said in the 3 months period, the prior quarter, that 6% of revenues have been lost to theft, okay, spoilage, because of those self-serve shrinkage, spoilage, theft. Yeah. And as a result, their profits fell 26%, because if you lose that much top line sales, it's going to have a disproportionate impact on your bottom. So, as the king of the checkout stories, that surprise you at all?
Well, I think what you do when you put the checkout, the self-checkout lanes in there, unfortunately, we can harken back to me saying, my brain is 30% criminal. There are many people who you're tempting them to steal. It's just so obvious to me. When I first saw those, I was like, oh my God, this is free stuff. Many people can't walk away from that without taking an item or two they think is overpriced, throw it in the bag. I don't think people pay for greeting cards anymore. They're too expensive and they're easy to hide. There's many things you can buy that you say, okay, this costs money. It's a good product. Other things, screw it. So I think these stores were foolish for putting these things in. Now they have cameras above them. They watch you supposedly while you're checking out. It gives that added dimension of, okay, Big Brother's watching me. I can't put something in my bag. And some stores have a weighing thing underneath the tray where you put food. They can tell if you drop two things in your bag rather than one. This is too many people in the world are suffering, trying to put food on the table, not making enough money, inflation, etc. You're giving them a reason to steal. It was a stupid idea. You got to have somebody who works for the store take your food and put it in a bag, run it through the register, and put it in your bag. That's the way you cut down on theft. Not letting people. You see what's happening. Every store in the country is being robbed by gangs of people who've had it, who just want crazy to overrun every city. Why do you think the checkout lanes for people to do these things on an honor system? No, it's a bad idea. Bad idea. Too tempting.
Well, it may drive me freaking crazy because, you know, I'm fairly competent from a tech standpoint.
Right.
And I'll get into one of those. And, you know, you pharmacies around here, in Louisiana, sell liquor. And so, and by the way, much better places than the liquor store. So I will go into a CVS or a Walgreens or go into a Winn-Dixie or something like that, and I'll buy some wine.
Sure. Well,
okay, here comes the 60-year-old guy up to the self-serve kiosk, and he's got two bottles of wine, and I go to put the UPC code up next to the thing, and you know, alarms go off in the store because somebody's got to come up and validate
I hate that.
my driver's license and my age.
Oh,
I'm
fucking
60 freaking years old.
Well, even sooner, I've been, cold medicine.
I've been drinking for 51 years.
I know. That's why I think I get, I have to show my license, of course. But don't forget, they also, they do this for Sudafed and certain medications because you can make crystal meth in your spare time, Mike. When you're not doing podcasts, you get a little lab going. You put out some crystal meth on the side. Now you can pay your bills with ease. This was a really bad idea. I don't think people understand that. Like I said, look, if I go to the checkout lane, and I always do the self-checkout, I'm faster than most people on the register, so I do it myself. But if I see, I bought three rolls for sandwiches, I plug in, okay, I'm looking, okay, rolls, and they'll say gourmet rolls or like a regular old roll. I'll press regular old roll. I'm not going to pay gourmet price. So there's that kind of shit going on too, where you go, oh, how many bags did you take? None. Meanwhile, you have four bags in your cart. There's all ways to go, fuck you, I'm not paying this money. It's ridiculous. So, yeah, they're going to see some shrinkage. Absolutely. And they should.
Well, I always see, every store I go in, there's always one or two poor employees that are stuck shagging every old lady problem at the self-serve kiosk.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
It eliminates the entire purpose of it, you know, which I assume was to bring efficiency to the business. It is not efficient if you have to both employ a person and pay for the technology, because the technology doesn't work seamlessly enough for a person to not be needed to intervene when it screws up. It's
you
crazy.
Need somebody. You need somebody. But I'll tell you what, I do it because I can't stand to be on a line and the person in front of me is not helping the cashier. They're not putting their things in their own bag. That drives me crazy. You've got a 67-year-old woman. By the way, we're getting so much closer to that age that I always make fun of. You got someone who's making some extra money, 67, 60 years old, and she's got to put all your shit in a bag after she rang it up. You're an able-bodied 40-year-old man. Put your stuff in a bag. Get rid of your phone. That drives me. I could have fist fights on those lines. So I just go to self-checkout to avoid that whole thing. I can't be around people like that lazy. I can't.
Imagine, I can only imagine you behind me when I go to order my 2 pounds of prosciutto. What the hell? What the hell would happen? You take a bat out of your.
I have a pull cue in the back of my Lincoln. I would be like this fucking guy. Are you kidding me, bro? You'd be like the guy who buys a week's worth of lotto tickets and spends $100 on lottery, and I'm behind him trying to get a Gatorade. I hate things. Man. I have a curse. I'm always the guy that gets behind the one with the most stuff. I just have this curse. It's been waiting
for years. I would buy the whole freaking ham hock, but no, I've tried to do this. And they won't. But here's what happens is, you know, this stuff is expensive, right?
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, it's depending on which kind you're getting, it might be as much as $20 a pound, depending on what it is, but it's definitely going to be in the teens. And so I'll say, I'll take that whole thing off your hands, but I don't want to pay for the bone. I mean, you can't charge me the same amount if I'm getting the bone.
Listen, I'm a businessman. I'm not paying for the bone.
No, they would just look at you like, dude, I went through an hour and a half of training, and none of it contemplated the possibility that some moron was going to walk up and try to buy an entire prosciutto. So get the F out of here.
Yeah, exactly. You got to find that kid. He'll do you a real solid. I know. Yeah, I agree. I love a prosciutto. They're beautiful. They're beautiful to look at. Never mind eat. But I don't like when prosciutto tries to extend itself into everything. Like, don't wrap it around cantaloupe. Can we not do that to prosciutto? It's too good to put around cantaloupe.
Well, dude, acting like it was the prosciutto's idea. I mean,
but people have to, you're bringing it down. Prosciutto is the king of all cold cuts. You don't wrap fruit in it or asparagus in it. You just put it on a sandwich, eat it alone with some mozzarella. I think people.
Well, I agree with, I don't mind the mozzarella wraps they do, the mozzarella wraps they do.
That's nice.
Yeah. Okay, no, we're on the same page. We're synced up on prosciutto, even though you chose pizza for your
eating contest. That's the move. That's the move. Prosciutto. That's a good move.
Okay, here's your chance to redeem yourself. We're going to go play a different game here. So
okay, all right.
right, you know Hollywood and you know music, so I figured this would be the perfect game for you. So,
all right,
I'm going to give you an artist. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you a song title. Uh-huh. And then I might even give you another clue if it looks like you need one, but I want you to tell me who the inspiration for that song was.
This is not
no, you're going to get these. You're going to get
all
these.
All right, let's see. Let's see. Okay.
So the first one is Elton John, Candle in the Wind.
Well, he did the second version for, well, Marilyn, then he did one for Princess Di.
Right. See, you're so good. You even got... The trick question, if someone was going to try to trick you on Princess Di, but it was Goodbye Norma Jean. It's Marilyn Monroe. Okay, so you're right. See, this is not hard.
Hey, you know why? We did square dancing at my elementary school to Elton John, and I used to hate square dancing, but I loved Elton John. I can't lose Elton John. I know good. That's the music I know. We grew up on Elton and Billy Joel. I'll crush this. Keep going. Let me see what you got.
Okay. John Legend, All of Me.
Oh, boy. All of Me.
Dude, don't make me try. You know that song.
Yeah, I know. It's got to be over Chrissy Teigen.
Of course.
Okay. I mean, yeah. I mean, that's the only woman in his life.
I don't know that I could hit a woman, but the true test would be that lady.
Yeah.
Okay, you're two for two. You're two for two.
Yeah.
You have something friendly to say about her?
Well, Chrissy Teigen, I mean, at one point she was absolutely gorgeous on the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. Then she became a pain in the ass, but strictly visually, she's beautiful. But I can't be, if she starts talking, I'm going to slit my own throat.
Okay.
Can't so be around her.
You're with me. Possibility that you could hit a woman.
If you play Fuck, Marry, Kill, I'm probably killing her.
Okay, well, stay tuned.
Okay.
Billy Joel, Uptown Girl.
Christy Brinkley.
Ooh, dude.
Come on. This is easy stuff. This is elementary.
No, that was his second. That was not the original. Who was the original?
Yes, it was.
No, it was.
Elle McPherson.
Elle McPherson was the original.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to give you that on a technicality. You lost your mind.
I knew that. He did date Elle before. Yeah, it was Elle. Yes.
Okay. I guess either answer is acceptable.
Christy was in the video.
Yes, Christy was in the video.
He married her. Okay, here we go.
Okay. Right. Now, this one's a little harder, but I know you're going to get this.
Okay.
Carly Simon, You're So Vain.
Warren Beatty.
There it is.
There's been some – she doesn't always come out and say that, but I've read it many times. It's Warren Beatty. He had everybody. He had Carly. He had everybody. I've been with the guy. He, just really quickly, he knows how to dial a woman's number with one hand. In other words, he'll just use his fingertips like it's a typewriter. He dials numbers that quickly. And he doesn't write them down. He remembers them when a girl gives him the number. He's our hero.
Folks, if you want to go back to some of the earliest episodes we did on Fame as a Bitch, where... You know, AJ had a period in his life where he was around, you know, Beatty and Jack Nicholson and Robert Evans and all of these people all of the time, and has some unbelievable stories with those folks. So check out Fame as a Bitch and some of those episodes. But I knew you would get Warren Beatty. You did not disappoint.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So look, you're 4 for 4, or is that 5 for 5? 4 for 4.
I know, I actually know the next question. I know the next song you're going to bring up. That's how good I am.
No, you don't.
You're going to bring up Layla.
No.
Go ahead. All right. Okay. I'm wrong. Go ahead.
I'm going to bring up John Mayer's Your Body is a Wonderland.
That's the girl that I had a crush on for a long time. I think many guys do. What's wrong with me? The chick from was it Ghost Whisperer? You know, I know the girl. Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Yes,
or Jessica Simpson. It could be
no.
Either one,
it's
Love Hewitt.
It's Jennifer Love Hewitt.
I mean, she really has the body from, you know.
She did.
She did. She was just heaven sent. That girl. Yeah.
She lived around the corner from me in L.A.
And, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She was something else.
She would go to the same coffee bean, that I went to. So I'd see her in the Coffee Bean occasionally, and I'd see her, and at the same time, she was two doors down from not Brooke, not the Brooke that was married to
Brooke Burke,
the other one who also was a game show host. Yeah. Brooke
of the blonde.
Brooke Burns.
She was on E. We were all at E at the same time. You have no idea what I was like in the makeup room. When those girls sat down for makeup, I would actually, well, it sounds horrible. I wouldn't like shove Brooke Burke, but I'd say, I can't sit next to you while you're getting made up. This is ridiculous. There was such perfect faces that I had to leave the makeup chair. I couldn't stare at them any longer. They were something else.
You know how polite I am, right?
Yeah, you don't do it. Yeah, exactly. You're very good at that.
I had a really difficult time. Like, we'd have the kids were babies, you know, we'd have the kids in the stroller and, you know, the dogs with us and be outside at a picnic table. And I'm there talking to my wife and, you know, the next table over is one of those two. And, you know, and they're wearing freaking, you know, Lululemon stage 1.0. I'm like, God damn it.
I know. It was a rough time.
That was bad. That was bad. Yeah. Okay. So you are on fire here.
Yeah. Child's play.
All right, this one may be a little tough. I know you coached the kid in football, but let's see if you know who Gwen Stefani's Holla Back Girl was about.
Who was Holla Back Girl about? It's a girl? No, wait. Oh, she's talking about a guy who was trying to get with her, and she was like, I'm not no Holla Back Girl. Right? That's basically...
The inspiration for the song is actually a woman.
Oh, it's a woman. Let me think. I can't...
Oh, I think we may have stumped AJ.
A woman. Okay, give me one. Okay, it's got to be somebody that...
It's somebody who hooked up with Gavin Rossdale.
Oh, then it's probably that chick, the Tiger Lily chick. Is it that Tiger Lily girl? I don't know this.
Courtney Love. Evidently, Courtney Love once called Stefani a cheerleader in the press, which to the public eye sparked Stefani's hit response, Holla Back Girl. It may also have had something to do with the fact that Love claimed to have slept with Stefani's ex, Gavin Rossdale. So,
oh, wow.
Courtney Love, Holla Back Girl.
I didn't know that. It's a great song. My daughter was a baby. She had to hear that song. You know, when babies are in the back seat and they tell you what number on the CD to press.
Mm-hmm.
Roxy had to have, I think it was number five, was three or five was Holla Back Girl. I didn't know that. But I'll tell you, you know, having coached Gwen and Gavin's son for a couple of seasons and they both came to games and Gavin's a great dude. He at the end of the practice, I'd always scrimmage with the kids and I'd run with them playing soccer or flag football. And Gavin always would play goalie or, you know, just run around with me and just a really good down to earth father. I love that about him.
No, I love the band too. I mean, they cranked. I mean, they were great.
They were great.
Okay. Maybe a hard one. Bob Dylan's Like a Rolling Stone.
That's about a woman?
No. This is about a guy. A cultural icon, famous artist of the time.
About an artist. Like a Rolling Stone.
Okay, we stumped him twice.
Let me think. It's about an artist. So it's not a girl. Well, maybe not a girl. I can't say I know who this is about.
So Dylan's biggest hit is actually a series of barbs aimed at this particular person. Around the time of the song, that person's relationship with his muse, Edie Sedgwick, had deteriorated, and she began spending more time with Dylan. As the story goes, Dylan blamed him for allegedly mistreating Sedgwick.
Andy Warhol. Yeah, Meany was. Yeah, my buddy. I have a little. I had one in with people with the Warhol, Andy Warhol factory scene. My buddy Kevin, who I affectionately called Gay Kevin when he was alive, he was with Andy Warhol from eighth grade on. He would go. He literally told me I was in eighth grade and I would be flying to Europe with some count who wanted to make me his plaything for the weekend in Sweden or whatever. You know, like that's the kind of life this guy led. So that's the one guy I have a link to Andy Warhol with. But that was some crazy scene, Warhol. And I didn't know that. That's good. That's interesting. Interesting.
Okay, we got two more.
All right, good. Good.
And I know that this audience would love to hear your story about this lady.
okay.
Mariah Carey's Obsessed.
Oh, boy. Her song Obsessed?
Yes.
I don't even know that song.
It's about a feud she had with a particular rapper.
Oh, it's got to be Eminem.
Yes, it's Eminem.
Because they had a fun time together. I can speak on this because I did as well with Mariah. She doesn't mention.
For the audience, you need to clarify that you did work with Mariah.
Well, we had a little bit of a relationship thing. You know, I was told to follow her. Her husband Tommy Mottola, the big music executive, told me to. You know, she's getting too big for her britches. She wants to sing black music. I want you to keep an eye on her. I mean, it was like a mafia meeting. I said, okay, Tommy, and Tommy could have helped my career with De Niro and all sorts of things. So I did this for Tommy. But then I started to like Mariah a lot. She was sweet. She was funny. She was goofy. And she gave me a private number to call her on. And Tommy was tapping that line. And he heard our conversations. They were sexual.
That's
right. It's not what a husband wants to hear. And then he just
hired you.
Oh, my God. He hired me to watch her, and I did the opposite. But
watched. You watched.
Oh, I did watch. And we had a little fun time at the Beverly Hills Hotel. But I'll tell you what I remember most about that, not to put down anything that happened in the bedroom, but there was a whole room in the hotel just for her luggage. You know the Beverly Hills Hotel's bungalows, right? So she had one room was just her luggage to go.
Come on.
I'm not kidding, Mike. I'm talking 26, 28 pieces of luggage that just travel with her. Not to mention all the people. Talking to her meant there's a guy doing a hair, a girl doing makeup. It was very rarely alone. But when we did get to be alone, we had a lot of fun. And I'd take my nephew Joey with me. Went to many dinners. And the way it began is I snuck into a wedding. I was with Chico. There's that name again. Up at my sister's kitchen, and I see Mariah Carey's getting married. And this is when I was starting to get into gossip, but I wasn't quite there yet. And I said, I'm going to get in that wedding. I'm going to sneak in the wedding. And my sister's like, how? I said, I'll do it. Me and Chico put on some suits. I got my ex-wife's scholastic pins for being the best in science. My ex-wife became the valedictorian of our high school. So I have all our pins on my lapel, and I put a little wire in my ear. We drive to this Metropolitan Club, fancy club in Manhattan, and I just said to people in the street, who's got the upstairs detail? I'm supposed to meet who? I'm Al. This is Pat. I pointed, and they go, oh, just go upstairs. They just didn't even care. So now we're in Mariah Carey's reception. I helped her. Me and Chico lifted her dress, her train, into the limousine. We were absolute nobodies, and every time I had a chance, I'd run to the bathroom or a phone booth. They had a phone booth in the club and write down notes for my story. And when I came out of that wedding, I had spoken to Robert De Niro, Barbara Streisand, Dick Clark, everybody, not to mention being with Mariah. And when I met her officially after that, she goes, you look familiar. I said, yeah, I was in your wedding. I snuck into your wedding.
And we had a
great laugh about that. She's a lot of fun.
What's she doing inviting Dick Clark to her wedding? I mean, come on.
You know, when you get to that stage, you just the reason why I mention it, because I'm behind. We were near Dick Clark because he's signing a book to say he's at the wedding. And he actually turned to a friend and said, how do you spell this bitch's first name again?
No, really?
Yeah. So I put that in the story. He didn't like that. But, you know, I talked to De Niro while he's pissing in the urinal. I did all sorts of crazy shit. I was trying to make my bones. It was like, this is your opportunity. Go. Yeah. It was like Eminem. You got one shot. And I wrote it, and I got hired.
Well, that's I've never heard that story. That's a good one.
That was fun.
All right, your last one here. I can't believe I threw this one in here. I just thought it was so funny. Aerosmith. Who is the inspiration? That's an inside West Islip joke, folks.
All right.
Who is the inspiration for Aerosmith's Dude Looks Like a Lady?
Oh, my God. That's going to be I know the girl that looks like him. It would be Carly Simon, but it's not about her.
No, the dude looks like a lady.
Oh, the dude. Right. Oh, my God. Is it Bob Dylan? It can't be. He would never denounce Bob Dylan like that. Dude looks like a lady. Give me like a little bit of a, maybe a little hint.
Give a clue without giving it away. So if
don't give it away. Let me see. I'm thinking of guys back then.
I'll give you the setting. Okay. So Steven Tyler walks into a bar in Boston with a woman.
In Boston.
He just walks into a bar in Boston and looks toward the bar and sees long blonde hair, and he assumes
Vince Neil. Now I recall it. It was Vince Neil. Yeah.
Wait, did you just Google?
No, you know what? I hung out with Tyler in South Beach a couple of times years ago, and I was asking him stupid questions like that. And he was very honest and forthcoming. He's a fun guy, Steve Tyler. I know it was about a hair band guy, so I threw out Vince Neil. It could have been other guys who had hair in those bands back then. But
if I had known that, I would have never listened to a single Motley Crue record. I mean, come on. He can't be the inspiration for Dude Looks Like a
Lady. Can you imagine? That's horrible. But I'll tell you, Vince Neil, you know, these guys had a ball. Oh, my God, what a ball they had. But there was a time before I got to L.A., probably before you did too, to come to L.A. during the hairband era, and Sunset Boulevard was nothing but like a block party at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, people playing the Troubadour, the Roxy. Yeah. It was the Rainbow. It was insane. And then Motley Crue had a house down the hill that everybody would show up at every night. Girls would walk in windows on the second floor. It was I wasn't here for that, but I heard it was just a ridiculous era that every guy got laid just because they were in the periphery of that band. Mm. Yeah, they had a ball.
Well, we've got a few minutes left. I think we've got time for one more story. So I'm going to go to a story that I just couldn't believe when I read it. And I have a feeling that it's going to hit you the same way that it hit me. But this takes place just outside of Portland, Maine, at a little beach town just outside of Portland, Maine. A woman was swallowed by quicksand.
Oh.
While enjoying a walk with her husband. Her name is Jamie Accord, and she was walking along the edge of the water at a place called Popham Beach State Park, which is in Phippsburg, Maine. And when she took the step, she suddenly dropped like a rock. She sunk to her hips in a split second, and she screamed. And this is, you know, as the high tide is starting to creep in, she screamed and yelled to her husband, "I can't get out." She couldn't feel the bottom or find her footing at all, and her husband Patrick was able to pull her to safety, and except for, you know, some minor scratches, I guess, and stuff, she wasn't injured. She was just scared to freaking death in this thing. And she said that, you know, afterward, when she changed her clothes, it was like the clothes were covered in wet cement.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like. Look, all I remember from Quicksand was it was like it was in every Tarzan movie, right? I mean,
yeah. Oh yeah, we were very afraid of Quicksand as kids. It was in a lot of movies, and it was so mysterious that it was petrifying, the thought of somebody falling in quicksand, and you couldn't save them because the more they struggled, the quicker they sank. But really, there are people that, I mean, there's no such thing as quicksand per se. It's not like it was portrayed in the movies, put it that way. But still, I feel the same way about that as I do about sinkholes in Florida. I mean, just a street opening up on your block and swallowing cars and houses. That phenomenon just scares the shit out of me.
Well, this is real, but when you do a little digging, it sort of took the scare away from me on the quicksand front. So this is a park ranger, I guess, who said that there was a series of winter storms that had rerouted a river that pours into the ocean, and all that softened the sand in the area where these beachgoers were walking. Okay, but he also said that when people are caught in super saturated sand like that or quicksand, they remain buoyant. You don't sink. They actually float and can wriggle themselves to safety without the assistance of somebody else. So, I mean, I know a lot of Tarzan movies that would have ended differently if you could just, wriggle yourself to safety in the quicksand.
What do you just remain calm and not do anything and eventually you'll get out?
There's nothing about remaining calm. It's not a sinkhole. It's not like it's...
Right.
Like it's bottomless and going to go to the center of the earth. Apparently, I guess because of the amount of sand there, it's unbelievably buoyant. So you're floating. You're not sinking.
Well, I know that you're not sinking, right? But we should tell people that if you're in a marshy type land in Florida or... I don't know, Carolinas maybe. There are some areas in America that have this kind of sand that are near estuaries and rivers that are pretty dangerous. I'm not one of those people who goes out and explores nature, but if you do, I guess this is something you got to watch out for. I mean, what would there even be a quicksand thing in a show we watched as kids if it didn't swallow somebody up? They don't put that stuff in movies or TV shows unless they know this shit happened.
Well, it was a lot cheaper to mix up some wet concrete than get like a lion for Tarzan to rescue, to wrestle. So I don't know, but that one caught my eye. It's out there, and I love those stories that are out there. So this was fun, dude. Folks, if you love stories about Hollywood, especially 80s, got some incredible stories about old Hollywood. Give Fame Is a Bitch a check. The show is mostly on Patreon, but there's a free episode that goes out once a week on Fame Is a Bitch on the feed. We also, AJ and I together, are doing a show that we call Everything Is a Bitch that we put on that same feed once a week. So there are two fresh shows on the free feed once each week. And, after you're there for a while, you might decide you want a greater dose of AJ, which you can get on a daily basis on his Patreon feed, which is patreon.com/fameisabitch. This show is called The Woody Overton Window, The Wow. And it's been fun having my pal AJ on with us. We wish Woody continued best here as he continues his recovery, but it looks very much like he's out of the woods. They've identified what it is. They've got the right treatments going, and he's improving rapidly. So you can expect to hear him on this show shortly. So again for listening, AJ. Thanks a ton. It's fun.
Thanks, brother. It was great. Thanks. A lot of fun. Thanks very much.
We will do it again. See ya.
All right, brother.
Stay.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.